ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरये। नष्टप्रायेष्वभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवतसेवया भगवतीयुत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्ठिकी। कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकीनन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः।
This morning we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 72, Chapter entitled The Slaying of the Demon Jarasandh, Text 23. Please repeat after me. Rajanya Bandhavaha hi ete brahma lingani bibhrati dadani bhikshitam tebhyah atmanam api dustyajam. Rajanya bandhavo hyete ब्रह्मलिंगानि बिभ्रति ददानि भिक्षितं तेभ्य आत्मानं अपि दुस्त्यजम्। राजन्य बंधवो ह्येते ब्रह्मलिंगानि बिभ्रति ददानि भिक्षितं तेभ्य आत्मानम् अपि दुस्त्यजम्। राजन्य बंधवो ह्येते ब्रह्मलिंगानि बिभ्रति ददानि भिक्षितं तेभ्य आत्मानम् अपि दुस्त्यजम्। राजन्यबन्धवो हेते ब्रह्मलिङ्गानि बिभ्रति ददानि भिक्षितं तेभ्य आत्मानम् अपि दुस्त्यजम्। राजन्यबन्धवो हेते ब्रह्मलिङ्गानि बिभ्रति ददानि भिक्षितं तेभ्य आत्मानम् अपि दुस्त्यजम्। माताजी राजन्य बंधवो हेते ब्रह्मलिंगानि बिभ्रति ददानि भिक्षितं तेभ्य आत्मानम् अपि दुस्त्यजम्।
वर्ड फॉर वर्ड ट्रांसलेशन। राजन्य बंधवः रिलेटिव्स ऑफ क्षत्रियस। ही इंडीड एते दीज ब्रह्म of Brahmanas, Lingani, the signs, Bibhrati,
they are wearing.
Gadani,
I should give.
Bhikshitam,
what is begged.
Tebhyah,
to them.
Atmanam,
my own body.
Api,
even.
Dustyajam,
impossible to give up.
Translation and purport by the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada.
Jarasandha thought, these are surely members of the royal order dressed as brahmanas. But still, I must grant their request for charity, even if they beg me for my own body.
Purport.
Here, Jarasandha reveals his strong commitment to charity, especially when begged by brahmanas.
Om ajnana timiranthasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha shri chaitanya manobhistham sthapitam yena bhutale swayam rupah kadamahyam dadati swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakhan Vitamsha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Shri Mate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pashyatya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Shri Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaurabhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jarasandha thought, these are surely members of the royal order, dressed as brahmanas. But still, I must grant their request for charity, even if they beg me for my own body.
So, seeking the blessings of all the assembled Vaishnavas, I would like to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam this morning as a humble service for my own purification. So, for those who have not been keeping track of what is happening, I'll just give a brief background of what is happening here. So, King Yudhishthir, he has decided to perform the Rajasuya sacrifice, and when the Lord comes to Indraprastha, Lord Krishna comes from Dwarka to Indraprastha, so in the course of their discussions, and then they decide that they have to first conquer all the kings in all the directions before King Yudhishthir can perform this sacrifice, this Rajasuya sacrifice. So, after all of that, it's only Jarasandha who has remained undefeated.
And it is essential for Jarasandh to be defeated in battle or for Jarasandh to accept the superiority or the sovereignty of Yudhishthir Maharaj before Yudhishthir Maharaj can go ahead with the Rajasuya sacrifice. So in direct combat, Jarasandh has been undefeated. So now Krishna, according to the advice he received from, who was that? Satyaki? Uddhava, sorry. Uddhava in Dwarka, he had recommended that actually instead of frontal combat, instead of going straight with an army, you should just go and one-to-one combat with Jarasandha. He can be defeated. So he had suggested to Krishna to take Arjuna and Bhima with him. So according to that plan, the three of them, Arjuna, Bhima and Krishna, they have come to the capital of this kingdom of Magadha, which is the kingdom of Jarasandha. And there, externally they are dressed as Brahmanas. But still, even though they put on the garb of Brahmanas, it is not easy for them to actually, you know, cover up or camouflage their Kshatriya traits. It just comes up. And as they say, it takes one to know one. So Jarasandh, being a very superior Kshatriya, belonging to the Kshatriya order, it is easy for him to recognize another Kshatriya. You know, he can recognize. So he himself is a Kshatriya, so he can easily recognize another person. However much that other person may try to cover up, try to camouflage the Kshatriya qualities, especially Kshatriyas of the order of Arjuna, Bhima and Krishna himself, they are not some minor Kshatriyas. They are also very powerful Kshatriyas. So it's not easy to cover up their qualities, their physical attributes, their traits. And Jarasandha himself, being a powerful Kshatriya, he easily recognizes these particular qualities. So in the previous verse we see Sukadeva Goswami says that from just, you know, small hints, not very externally very prominent, but still from certain small hints, Jarasandha concludes. Sukadeva Goswami says that from the sound of their voices, their physical stature and the marks of the bowstrings on their forearms. So when they, you know, use the bow and arrow, when they release the arrows, the bowstring, it also hits against their forearms. So there are a lot of marks of the bowstrings left on the forearms. So from the sound of their voices, their physical stature and the marks of the bowstrings on their forearms, Jarasandha could tell that his guests were of the royal order. He began to think that he had seen them somewhere before. So then Acharyas point out, in the purport it is said that the Acharyas point out that Jarasandha had seen Lord Krishna, Bhimasen and Arjun at Draupadi's Swayamvar ceremony. And since, I mean, he could not recall where they had seen them, but he could easily understand that these are Kshatriyas, these are not Brahmanas, even though externally they are wearing the dress of the Brahmanas. So he said, since they had come begging in the guise of Brahmanas, Jarasandha thought that they must be low-class Kshatriyas, as indicated here by the word Rajanya Bandhu, or in our present today's verse, Rajanya Bandhava. So now, this particular personality, Jarasandha, we must consider who is an asura. In Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna book, who is an asura? Asura means generally somebody who is typecast or who is portrayed as somebody with big fangs and large nails, long nails, you know, maybe horns on the head, red eyes. These are just external features. But scriptures tell us, how do you identify who is a asura? So this word asura, we can break it up as asuramante. Asuramante iti asura. Or somebody, asu means the process of breathing, the process of respiration. So asu ramante, somebody who takes pleasure in the process of breathing. Or actually somebody who is just taking pleasure, not just in the process of breathing, but because he is living in this body, who is taking pleasure through his body, through his senses. Somebody who is just engaged in enjoying his senses. Just engaged in enjoying his senses can be called as an asura. But here we see that Jarasandha, he is displaying higher qualities. He is displaying qualities whereby he is talking about giving charity. Now charity is seen as a very, very noble work. Doing charity, being generous to others is a very noble work. So then how will we categorize Jarasandha as a demon or an asura? So for that, scriptures give us one more definition of asura, and that is Vishnu Bhakta Bhavet Daiva Asurat Asura Tad Viparyaya. That means anybody, you can have somebody who is perfectly following all the scriptural injunctions, everything, but still, if he does not accept that Krishna or Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he is the enjoyer of everything that is. Bhoktaram Yajna Tapasam Sarva Lokamaheshwaram, and he is the master of all the worlds. If you don't accept that, then that person is a demon. So Jarasandh is a demon because we have seen in the previous chapters in Srimad Bhagavatam how he does not accept the superiority of Krishna, even though it has been proved time and time again, 17 times, even though he has been defeated, but still he is not ready to accept the superiority of Krishna. So it has been, the point has been driven home so thoroughly, but still he is not ready to accept the superiority of Krishna. So Jarasandha displays the classic mentality of demoniac personalities that Krishna describes in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Krishna describes that the demoniac person thinks, so much wealth do I have today, and I will gain more according to my schemes. So much is mine now, and it will increase in the future more and more. He is my enemy and I have killed him, and my other enemies will also be killed. I am the lord of everything. I am the enjoyer. I am perfect, powerful and happy. I am the richest man surrounded by aristocratic relatives. There is none so powerful and happy as I am. I shall perform sacrifices. I shall give some charity, and thus I shall rejoice. In this way, such persons are deluded by ignorance. Classic mentality of demoniac personalities. In the 16th chapter, when Krishna discusses the divine and demoniac natures, he gives this. And here we see Jarasandha exactly represents what is described in these particular verses. I shall do sacrifice. I shall perform sacrifice. I shall give some charity. But the purpose of performing sacrifice or giving charity is, what is the purpose? Not for the ultimate welfare of the receiver of the charity. Rather, again, the purpose is self-aggrandizement. See how much charity I have given. Which in today's day and world we see many, many people having so many charitable intentions, many, many multi billionaires displaying charitable intentions and establishing foundations and grants for performing so-called charity. But then such charitable works are advertised using full page advertisements and billboard advertisements, which is nothing short of self-aggrandizement. So again, ultimately, this is classic demoniac mentality. So Jarasandha perfectly typifies this kind of mentality which Krishna talks about in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. So then, let us come to this particular thing here. In this purport, a very nice thing is mentioned. So I will talk a bit about this charity. Because the purport talks about, Jarasandh reveals his strong commitment to charity. And there is one more caveat to it. Especially when begged by Brahmanas. So in the purport, when this particular line is added, it assumes greater significance. Jarasandh reveals his strong commitment to charity, especially when begged by Brahmanas. So I'll just briefly discuss, I thought, about charity, okay? This is the particular topic of charity. So, first and foremost, why perform charity? Why perform charity in the first place? This question might come, you know, we might think about this. Why do I need to perform charity? Like it says in this particular, I just read, why not just accumulate more and more for my own? I mean, everybody feels, you know, especially the way the current day prices and the costs of living are going, you know, everybody feels that it's always, you know, less. How much ever I earn, it's going to be less. Where's the question of performing charity? I know one of my very good friends, this particular devotee, he was working in the IT industry for quite some time, and he was working with a good company at a good post. He was being paid very good salary. So he worked for some time, you know, quite some number of years. And at one point of time, he thought, I have sufficient money saved up, and maybe if I, just invest it nicely, I'll be able to live off whatever I've earned till now for the rest of my life. And then I don't need to, work hard, slog like a, ass day in and day out. I can dedicate my life more to my spiritual practices. So then he just gave up his job. And he had invested his money, and then he started doing certain services for the temple, for ISKCON, certain services. And then, meanwhile, at that time, he had a child, and the child was very, very small, just 6 months, 1 year or something. But then over 2-3 years later, the child grew up, and the question of the child's schooling came up. And when he went around to gain admission for the child in different schools. He went around and then they saw good schools and all these. And they started finding out how much would be the cost of educating the child. And when they heard the charge, the kind of fees. Sorry, I am not aware. Many of you all might be more knowledgeable about this subject. I am not aware, much aware because. But I heard from this devotee, when he heard about this, then he started having second thoughts. He started having second thoughts whether whatever he has saved up, whatever investments he has done, will it be sufficient? Will it be actually sufficient for him? So then, ultimately he said, okay, better I should not take, chances about the future life of my child. Better I take up a job again. And then he again went into a job hunt and it took him some time, but he landed a job. So, the point was, why perform charity? In today's day and age, with the increasing prices and so many, cost of living, everybody is finding it difficult to make ends meet. And we are talking about performing charity. Classic example that Srila Prabhupada gives about, human nature. About a bag of grains, if left on the street, what happens to it? You will see many birds come flying in, some few small animals may also come, a rat or something. And they come flying, they take whatever is they need at that moment. They might be hungry, especially early in the morning you see birds flying all over the place just in search of food. So they might be hungry, they are hungry. They come, packets few grains, and after a few grains, they have eaten a few grains, their hunger is satisfied, and that's it, they fly away. They don't worry about what is the future, whether tomorrow also this bag of grain will be here. They don't worry about it. They don't have any worries of that kind. But say a man comes there, a human being comes there. He looks at the bag of grain and, you know, a handful or maybe two handfuls of grain would be sufficient to satisfy his hunger for the moment. But then, what does the man do? He picks up the whole bag of grains and walks away. He picks up the whole bag of grains and walks away. Now, this is not something which is actually, if we observe this, you know, if we observe this, you know, there was a study done in a Western in university about the nature of children when they are hungry. There was a study done. And when young kids are served food on a plate, small children are served food on a plate, especially mothers, you all might know this better than us, especially better than me. But I have observed this. I also later when I heard about this study, I made an observation. When young children, small children, 2, 3, 4 years of age, even 5 years of age, when they are served food on a plate, they will eat only as much as their hunger is satisfied. You may load up the plate with all kinds of goodies, but the moment they feel my hunger is gone, they stop eating. They stop eating. There is no question of, you know, cleaning up the whole plate. No. They just stop eating and then the parents run after the kid. No, no, just one more morsel. But they are absolutely not interested. Absolutely not interested. And the flip side is, as soon as they are hungry, they want food. Whatever might be the situation, as soon as the kids are hungry, 4-5 year old kid, they want food at that moment. They won't consider, oh, we are traveling, we are moving in a car, or, you know, what is the situation around. No, no. Now I am hungry, I want food now. And as soon as you give them food, they eat as much as the hunger lasts. Hunger is over, stop eating. That's it. So this was an observation made by this particular study. So similarly, this particular nature of human beings, you know, to accumulate is not something which is inherent within them. So as a small child, when he grows up, then he sees around the table the adults, and then it is something which is actually inculcated within him. He is trained to clean his plate when he gets up from, after he finishes eating. That means, whatever be the status of his hunger, if there is something remaining on the plate, he has to finish it. So that is the kind of training, and therefore over a period of time, this child, you know, even if he has taken more, then there is no question. The whole question is, I should not waste. Maybe that's a good principle, but the point that I am trying to say is, this, whether my status, whether I need it or not, I just take it. Whether I need it or not, I just take it. This particular thing is something which is like, you know, trained. Maybe by fear, maybe by the circumstances, maybe by the kind of family the child grows up in. But over a period of time, it's trained into the, it becomes a part of the psyche that, you know, you never know. You know, save for a rainy day. You never know what might happen. Save for a rainy day. These kind of, you know, then aphorisms come into play. So therefore, this particular modern society is training people, you know, sort of, to accumulate more and more. You know, the more the merrier. Just try to accumulate more and more. More wealth, more possessions, more gadgets. Have more. If you have one, get one more. So this greed is a human trait, which is displayed only by human beings, not by other living entities on this planet. So therefore, if we have this particular trait, then how relevant is our discussion on charity? Why should we do charity? Exactly for this reason. You know, exactly for this reason. Because human beings are characterized by this propensity to be greedy, therefore, it is all the more essential to discuss about means to reduce this particular need to accumulate things by any means possible. Example is, if someone has fever, If someone has fever, then only we discuss about how to reduce the fever. You know, we don't discuss about somebody, you know, reducing the fever if somebody doesn't have fever. So since we have this particular trait of being greedy, therefore we have to discuss. And being charitable or doing charity reduces this fever of greed within human beings. Being a charitable person reduces the fever of being greedy. So in the first few chapters of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is talking, just giving knowledge. He's talking about karma yoga, jnana yoga, dhyana yoga. He just gives knowledge. But as he progresses towards the later chapters, he gives direct instructions. So in the 17th chapter, Krishna is talking about you have to do charity, and what kind of charity you should do, what kind of charity you should not do. You know, very clear-cut instructions. So therefore, once we have established that why we should perform charity, to reduce our greed, fever of greed, so then let us think about what is charity. You know, what is meant by charity? So classic example of charity, or classic definition of charity, or understanding that we get, typically if we look at a dictionary is, charity means to give help, to give money, to give food to those in need. A more broader definition of charity would be to have a kindly and a lenient attitude towards people. To be more lenient towards people, to be more accepting. You know, different people might have different traits, different idiosyncrasies. But to accept all of that, you know, and be lenient. So that would be a more broader understanding. That's what is discussed in the different dictionaries. But in the Vedic scriptures, what is described as dana, typical word, Sanskrit word for charity is dana, is any action of relinquishing the ownership of what one considers or identifies as one's own and investing the same in a recipient who is without expecting anything in return. Or, in very simple words, something which a person feels is mine, if we give it to someone else without expecting anything in return, that is the classic definition of dana. Now, mostly the context, the word dan is used in context of donation or charity, you know. But within the Vedic scriptures, we find different flavors of this particular word dan. Different flavors, you know. Dan is typically in the context of donation or charity or giving something, some material object to another person without anything expecting anything in return. But other flavors of this particular word that we find within the Vedic scriptures is paropkar. Paropkar means, again, helping others, but not just helping others with material substances or material objects. Rather, helping others to elevate themselves. Second would be, again, one more word, which is dakshina, which means giving somebody something, you know, or like a payment, giving somebody in something for in return of something that person has done for us. Maybe that person has not given us any material object, but as a gratitude we give something without expecting anything in return. Or there is another thing is, which is being referred to in this particular verse here, is the third aspect of dan or charity would be bhiksha. You know, when somebody comes to the door without any preconceived notions, which is typically we see in places like Vrindavan and especially in the Braj, it is very common. If a sadhu walks up to the house of a person and they just ask for bhiksha, very readily they will give whatever food is there available in the house. You know, they will just come out and give the food. And in scriptures, You know, in Vedic scriptures, again, there are different kinds of dan also that we hear. You know, most of you all must have heard of kanyadan. Okay, when a father of the bride hands over his daughter to the bridegroom, that is not like, you know, that's not considered, oh, generally it is in movies and it generally is seen as, oh, a big burden off my chest. But the Vedic standard of looking at it is, actually the father of the bride is doing a great charitable work. He is doing charity to the bridegroom by giving his daughter. Why? Why is it charity? Because this bridegroom, who is supposed to live his married life, and during his entire married life, whenever he has to perform any Vedic activity, any Vedic sacrifice or any, you know, service to the Lord, his better half has to be present. You know, the presence of his wife is as important as his own presence. And many Vedic sacrifices enjoin that without the presence of the wife, therefore we find even in the, without the presence of the wife, this particular sacrifice cannot take place. It is not possible. Therefore, we find in the Ramayana also, when after Lord Ram banishes Mother Sita to the forest, when he had to perform a sacrifice, the sages said, you cannot do this without Mother Sita at your side. So then they had to find an alternative. And Lord Ram would not marry again. So they had a deity of Mother Sita, life-size deity of Mother Sita, made of gold. And that deity was substituted in place of the actual Mother Sita, but Mother Sita was present in the form of that deity. So, in Vedic sacrifices, without the wife, it is not possible for the husband to perform any sacrifices. Her presence is equally important in certain particular rituals. So, therefore, it was actually a great charity that the father of the bride would do upon this particular bridegroom, you know, who could not perform any Vedic sacrifices if he didn't have a wife. So therefore it is kanya dan. It's a great charitable work by the father of the bride upon the bridegroom. I am giving kanya dan. Then there would be, we have heard this many times, godan. We have heard this many times that Vasudev, Nanda Maharaj, when Krishna was born, he donated so many lakhs of cows to all the brahmanas. So that is godan. Then bhudan, donation of land, piece of land. Or vidyadan, giving knowledge to somebody, gyanadan. Or very, very, very famous in India, and many people do this, those who are not even adherents of the Vedic lifestyle, even they believe in this particular dan, and that is annadan. And abhayadan. This is the ultimate dan, where a person is given fearlessness. Now generally what is fear, what is every person fearful of in this world, in this material world? What is death? Death is the ultimate fearful agent. So abhayadan means giving somebody fearlessness from death, which is considered to be the ultimate dan. So who should we give charity to? You know, who is a qualified candidate to receive charity? So once there is this very famous story of Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, who was on parikrama, and when many beggars would come to ask for, you know, something from the pilgrims, and he saw that many of the people who were accompanying him on parikrama were not encouraging this. They were not giving anything to the beggars. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he is quoted as saying that if we are not charitable to people who seek charity, it would only make our hearts hard. And for a spiritual seeker, a hard heart is not something which is very desirable. You know, we need a soft heart to attract Krishna to reside within it. Ultimately, our whole practice of spirituality is just so that Krishna will come and reside within our heart. We'll be totally engaged in the service of Krishna, and we'll be totally, you know, Krishna conscious. So, in order to attract Krishna to reside within our heart, it is necessary to have a soft heart. And here Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur is saying that if we don't give charity to somebody who is seeking charity, it is going to make our heart hard. So therefore, also then there is another consideration where Krishna says in the 17th chapter about whom not to give charity. He says that charity which should not be performed at an impure place, should not be performed at an improper time, it should not be performed to unworthy persons. And even if it is at a proper time, in a pure place and to worthy person, if it is done without proper attention and respect, you know, just as a formality, okay, take. You should be properly attentive, properly respectful to the person whom you are giving charity, then that is the proper way of giving charity. So generally devotees are advised to carry prasadam always with them. We carry prasadam. So there is very little risk. The only risk is sometimes you give prasadam to somebody and he is actually interested in getting charities of some different kind. So they may not be interested in this and they might throw it away. But still, you know, even though if they might not eat, maybe some animal might eat, some insect might eat, and ultimately it will result in some charity. But still there is that small level of risk when we give prasadam. But if we give some money, monetary donation to such a person, then there is every chance that that person might misuse it because he is not an unworthy person. So who is the worthy person? Who is a worthy person? And a clue to this particular thing is given again in today's purport that Jarasandh reveals his strong commitment to charity, especially when begged by Brahmanas. Now, who is a worthy person? Now, using this word Brahmanas in today's day and age is a little, difficult because the whole understanding of who is a Brahmana has been marred by so many social events, by so many social commentators, that who is a Brahmana? And the scriptures tell us that Brahma Janati iti Brahmanas. Somebody who is living his life on the platform of Brahman, he understands, he has actually realized Brahman, that person is a Brahmana. So therefore, why the scriptures over and over again we see where many kings who give charity, generally it is always mentioned that charity is given to Brahmanas. Always, it's always mentioned, charity is given to Brahmana. Charity is given, cows are donated to Brahmana, gold is donated to Brahmana. Why we always, you know, this particular word Brahmana comes into the picture? Because Brahmana, by his being situated in the platform of Brahman, he is able to elevate the consciousness of the giver who is giving him donation, who is giving him the charity. Even that particular person's consciousness can be elevated to the platform of Brahman. And the best thing about Brahmana is he is not interested in the quantity. He is satisfied with whatever is given. Classic example is where the discussion takes place between Vamandev and Bali Maharaj. Vamandev comes to Bali Maharaj and he says that, give me 3 paces of land. And then Bali Maharaj says, do you know whom you are asking this donation from? Have you any idea of who I am? What is the capacity of me? You know, how much, what can I give to you? You should ask more sensibly. You know, be little sensible when you are asking for charity. You don't understand what you are asking and to whom you are asking. So then the response that this particular, you know, that Vamandev gives to Bali Maharaj, that response is so profound. Vamandev says that, oh my dear king, even the entirety of whatever there may be within the 3 worlds to satisfy one's senses cannot satisfy a person whose senses are uncontrolled. So that is one of the prerequisites of a person who is receiving charity or dan. His senses must be controlled. And Brahmana, by definition, you know, Not that just because he wears a thread or he is born in a family where his ancestors were Brahmanas, maybe they were very pious and very practicing Brahmanas. But at this, in today's day and age, this particular person who claims himself to a Brahmana is somebody who is educated in the Western ways of life, you know. Smoking, drinking, no sense control. You can't call such a person Brahmana. Maybe he is born in a family where previously in past generations, people might have been adhering to that standard of Brahmana. But that doesn't qualify the current generation, person in the current generation to call himself Brahmana. Krishna gives very clearly in Bhagavad Gita that who is a Brahmana? Not by birth, but by his qualities and by his activities, a person identifies whether he is a Brahmana, whether he is a Kshatriya, whether he is a Shudra or whether he is a Vaishya. So that is how you identify who is a Brahmana. So this is a classic case. First requirement, he should be sense controlled. First requirement, who to give to charity? A Brahmana. And Brahmana means a person who is sense controlled. Unless a person is sense controlled, whatever charity you might give, Vamandev himself is saying, the Lord is saying, that whatever you might give in these entire three worlds, if you give him, still he will not be satisfied. And the next verse he says that, if I were not satisfied with 3 paces of land, then surely I would not be satisfied even with possessing one of these 7 islands consisting of 9 varshas. Even if I possessed 1 island, I would hope to get others. So this is what I read out in the beginning of my class about Jarasan. You know, this was what I started with. That what is demoniac nature? So much wealth do I have today and I will gain more according to my schemes. You know? So this is demoniac nature. So Vamandev is repeating the same thing. That if I possess 1 island, then I will say I want to get the others also. There is no satisfaction. So for somebody who is not sense controlled, there is no satisfaction. So ideal situation would be a Brahmana who is sense controlled. Sense control is just one of the characteristics of a Brahmana. Krishna gives so many characteristics. Saucham, then cleanliness, then sense control. These are primary characteristics which a Brahmana displays. So therefore, a Brahmana is a person. And not only that, over and above this is the Brahmana possesses the ability because of his knowledge of scriptures, because of his having realized the Brahman, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord within his heart, to elevate the consciousness of the person from whom he is receiving that particular charity. Unless that particular person to whom we are giving charity has this particular ability to elevate the consciousness of the donor, then there is no meaning to such charity or such donation. So, we have seen why do charity, and then we saw what are the different kinds of charity, and then who is qualified to receive charity. Now in English, there is a very famous saying, I am sure most of you all must have heard, that is, charity begins at home. Okay? So we are talking about charity in terms of to others. But even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has spoken of this, you know, charity begins at home, in the sense that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives this famous instruction, I would say, to all the people who are born in this land of India, in this Bharat Bhumi. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Bharata Bhumite Haila Janma Jar, Janma Sarthak Kari Kara Paropkar. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that those who are born in this land of Bharat Bhumi, they have to first realize or Janma Sarthak Kari or realize the purpose of their birth, why they have taken birth here, and to realize it. And then kara paropkar, then spread it to the other countries or to everyone else who does not have the fortune of being born in India. So therefore, janma sarthak kari means what? We have to first raise ourselves to a higher level of higher standard of living than this particular thing that just grab, just collect, just accumulate, you know, just save, just do it, just get more, the more the merrier. raise ourselves to a higher platform. So, actually, generally understanding of charity is, you know, people think that, okay, charity means giving something to the poor person, giving some money, like we discussed so many things, kanyadan, godan, you know, there is some exchange of some things. But actually, a higher level of charity is, you know, higher level of wealth, I would say, more than any wealth of this material world, any material object, a higher level of wealth can be understood. There is a very nice Subhashit in Sanskrit. It says, na chora haryam, na cha rajya haryam, na bhratur bhajyam, na cha bharakari. Vyaye krite vardhate eva nityam, vidya dhanam sarva dhanat pradhanam. This is knowledge. Knowledge is this, that kind of a wealth, which is, you know, wealth generally people are afraid that wealth might be, we know of so many multi billionaires, wealthy people, but they have difficulty sleeping at night. You know, they have hypertension. Why? Because they are worried that, you know, the stock market might crash, the oil prices are crashing, so many things might happen and their net worth will go down in the world. You know, people are worried about this. So, vidya or knowledge, transcendental knowledge is such a wealth that na chora haryam. It cannot be stolen away by any thieves. Na chora haryam, na cha raja haryam. Nor it cannot be taken away by the king or the government. Then, na bhratra bhajyam. You don't have to share it with your siblings. Generally, somebody who gets wealth from, you know, ancestral property, wealth from their family, such ancestral property compulsorily has to be shared among all your siblings. You cannot get away with taking everything for yourself. No. It's a law. But this wealth, whatever you accumulate in terms of knowledge, you don't have to share it with your siblings. And na bharakari. Generally, when we talk about material wealth, you know, maybe gold, even currency notes, you know, whatever you are talking about, it is something which is, you know, physical and therefore very heavy. It's a big load. So somebody might say, no, no, nowadays it's all, you know, just in the numbers, in the bank accounts. I don't have to carry anything. It's all electronic money. So it's not heavy, it's very light. I just have to have my electronic device, maybe a phone, a smartphone or something. So it's not heavy. Where is it heavy? It's not heavy physically, but it's a heavy load, a heavy burden that you are carrying on your head, on your shoulders. So even there is no heavy load on your shoulders, in that sense also, because of knowledge. And the best characteristic of this particular wealth of knowledge is, vyaye krite vardhate eva nityam. Like any other wealth, the more you spend, it reduces. Whatever you have, if you spend it, then the remaining stock that you have is reduced. You know? But this particular wealth of knowledge is vyaye krite. The more you spend it, vardhate eva nityam. It just goes on increasing. The more you spend the wealth of knowledge, the more it increases. Therefore, vidyadhanam sarvadhanat pradhanam. And this wealth of knowledge, you know, if we, charity begins at home, we ourselves take gain, you know, we ourselves study the scriptures given by acharyas, the actual words spoken by Krishna himself. Krishna himself gave us these words in the Srimad Bhagavad Gita. He spoke to his friend. Actually, the words in the knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita is said to be the essence of all the scriptural injunctions found in all the Vedic scriptures. In the Gita Mahatmya, it is said, Sarva Upanishado Gavo Dogdha Gopalanandana. If you take all the scriptural knowledge that is there in all the Upanishads, and compare to all that knowledge as a cow, and Dogdha Gopalanandana, and the cowherd man who is milking the cow is Krishna. And for the cow to give milk, when does the cow release milk from its udders? When there is a calf. So that calf is a person who is ready, who is surrendered and who is ready to accept this. So who plays that role? Partha Vatsaha. That means Arjuna is like that calf, who surrenders to Krishna and is ready to accept this knowledge. Sudhir Bhokta. And then Partha Vatsa. What is that? How does it end? Dugdha Gopalanda, Partha Vatsa, Sudhir Bhokta. Dugdham Gita Amrita Mahat. And all the other audience who is there, they are all enjoying this nectarine milk. Dugdham Gita Amrita Mahat. So this milk which comes out of the udders of this cow, which personifies all the Vedic knowledge which is there within all the Upanishads and all the Vedas, you know, this milk which comes out of its udders personifies the essence. The essence of a cow's body is the milk which is given by the cow. So similarly, the essence of all Vedic scriptural knowledge in the Upanishads and the Vedas is Bhagavad Gita. So we have to also gain this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita within our own lives and, you know, give that knowledge more and more. Give a charity of the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita. So why? Not only because it is the supreme most knowledge, but again Krishna in Bhagavad Gita itself, he is giving this particular more impetus or more reasons for us to distribute this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita or to give this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita to everyone, every person whom we meet. Krishna says in the 18th chapter, for one who explains this supreme secret to the devotees, the supreme secret of the knowledge of Bhagavad Gita, pure devotional service is guaranteed and at the end he will come back to me. There is no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. So for one who gives this charity of Bhagavad Gita or gives this charity of the knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna to each and everyone who tries to spread this knowledge to the max, Krishna is very much pleased and Krishna holds him very dear to his heart. So what more impetus do we need to do this charity? And in this past 1 month, the month of December, when we have this Bhagavad Gita marathon, we go all out to distribute this particular knowledge and do the supreme charitable work. So therefore, today, we discussed that how, first of all, why we should do charity. Then, we discussed what are the different types of charity. Then, we discussed that who is a person who is qualified to receive charity and how charity begins at home. We have to first become charitable to ourselves, raise ourselves to a higher standard by accepting this supreme charity of knowledge that we are receiving from the acharyas in parampara. And after we have accepted this charity and we have fortified ourselves, we should go out. And because knowledge is such a wealth or such a wealth which increases the more we spend it, we go out and more distribute this knowledge so that we can become very dear to Krishna. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. If anybody has any queries or questions, we can ask. Thank you. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavat Mahapuran ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.